This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at mofad.org.
This week on Meat and Three, we're getting semantic to understand the deeper meaning behind some of the foods we love. First, we'll look at the big debate happening around the word milk.
Who the hell are you to tell me what is the name of my product and my landscape and everything we've cared about when, you know, you don't have anything invested in except to put out a little money to buy it? It's our entire life.
Then we get the lowdown on the language of cider.
So the first thing that's really confusing about dryness is that it has nothing to do with how something actually feels in your mouth.
And finally, we get our fill of tiki talk.
You don't walk into a tiki bar and be like, oh yeah, this is what Polynesia is probably like. Like, it's supposed to be like fantasy and stuff. That's the hard part. It's so easy to do tiki bad, and that's where it gets a bad name.
Tune into this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Giampiero Bertolini. We'll talk to Giampiero about Brunello di Montalcino and, of course, Beyond di Santi. We'll taste a little Beyond di Santi for our weekly wine sip. And Giampiero slipped in a few other bottles, so we'll taste those. I'm your host, Sam Benrubi. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Giampiero Bertolini began his career at none other than Procter & Gamble. After many years of P&G, he moved into the wine business, taking a job at Italian wine icon Frescobaldi, spending 16 years overseeing global sales and marketing. Giampiero left Frescobaldi last year to become the CEO of storied Brunello di Montalcino producer Beyond di Santi and its seven-generation winemaking family in Il Greppo, Italy. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Giampiero.
Thank you, Sam.
Did I get that intro right?
You did well.
Okay, good. I want to make
sure.
Thank
you. Thank you.
All right. I want everyone to know we're going to talk a lot about Montalcino. We're going to talk about Beyond di Santi. But I want to give everyone a little context, and I want you to give us a little background on your journey in life and wine that got you very recently to Beyond di Santi. So tell me a little about that journey.
So that journey has been a fantastic journey, I would say, because as you say, I'm coming from a different world, which was still about liquid, but different kind of liquid. So when I joined the wine business, I was really happy. That was back in 2002. And I entered this world by chance by meeting my former boss skiing on the mountain in Tuscany. And after 2 days skiing together, he told me, Giampiero, why don't you come to us? I have a nice place in the wine business. And I say, man, listen, this is not really what I was thinking. And after 4 months, I joined this beautiful world, which is the wine business. And recently, I was asked to take this position as a CEO of Beyond di Santi, which for me was a dream because, you know, Beyond di Santi is an icon, an iconic wine. Not only in Italy, internationally recognized.
Sure.
And so when the French people, which are now the new owner of the group, which obviously owns Beyond di Santi, asked me to take this position, I was really excited because to have the possibility to reinvest and put back this iconic wine in the right places in the world, for me has been really a dream.
So let me ask you about that. So you went from a multi-generational family, the Frescobaldis,
yeah,
to another multi-generational family, the Beyond di Santi wine family. The difference is, and you just mentioned it, this one is owned by a large European company. Are you experiencing any major differences or challenges, or you don't feel that in this environment?
Basically, yes, there is a difference. There is a difference because in the first case, the family has been, is very much involved in the business, on a daily business, which is good, but it's also limiting probably the way you can really work and act on a daily basis, and also on a strategic view. With Beyond the Sun, it's a completely different because they gave me this responsibility. I just report periodically what I'm doing. We get aligned on the strategies, and then it's my goal.
Right.
So that's the biggest difference, which I found so far.
Now, what about capital? Do you feel you have access, or is there, you know, a commitment to capital to help you?
Yes, definitely. That was part of the deal when I decided to come here, and this was my first question.
In order to make the brand
exactly.
go where you want it.
Absolutely. They invested a lot of money to buy the brand because, as you know, it was not just value based on the hectares. There was a price for the value of the brand, and they want to make this brand again back where it deserves. So they have money, they have capital, and that's challenging. That's really
now,
amazing.
Because you're going to fix it, and we don't like to dwell on the negative, you say we want to bring the brand back to where it is. What's happened? Is it farming? Is it winemaking? Is it marketing? I mean, what needs the attention?
Well, the attention is, I would say, 360 degree, because basically what happened is that the family Beyond the Santi decided to get a new partner, new capital to keep investing in the company. That was not possible for the family. Because
they
didn't have the possibility.
Right.
So this is the key to keep doing what we have been doing for 200 years.
The prospects wouldn't be great without the interaction.
Without that. So that's the key point. The wine is excellent today, but we believe that we can do better and better and better.
So will it have any effect, you coming in and EPI, on the culture and the product?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Our word is evolution, it's not revolution. So we are there to keep going and to keep growing quality, to keep growing the mentality of the people, to keep growing distribution in the world, but not doing revolution.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Your objectives and goals in the next few years, you may have stated, but again, what are they?
Well, we have a long-range plan for first investment that starts from the vineyard into the cellar. We may have a new cellar in 5 years' time, which will be state-of-the-art.
Much needed?
Much needed to keep the quality going up.
Right.
Absolutely, yes. But everything has the target to keep coherence in the product as has been so far in the last two centuries. So obviously we want to grow, but our strategy is a value strategy. We can grow much in volume because that's basically what we have in terms of volume, but we want to grow in value because we believe that Beyond the Santi could stay in a competitive arena, which is an international arena. It's not Brunello, it's not Italy. It's an international arena, and our competitors are the French wine, which are valued much higher than Brunello.
Right.
And we believe that this brand deserves a much higher position in the market.
I agree, and you have a background where you can push that.
Yeah.
Are any of the objectives to acquire more acreage or not immediately?
We are looking around because we need some more acres of Brunello to improve overall what we have today in Greppo. So we need to replant some of the vineyard because
existing
it's 16. That's part of the process, obviously.
Right.
So to avoid any loss of production, we need to buy something to use that to replace the new one.
Right. So that'll happen in the next few years.
Probably even shorter.
Okay.
Than that. Yeah.
All right. So help me talk about Montalcino,
Which
is really the birthplace of Brunello di Montalcino, mm-hmm. and, you know, where you do everything. I want to talk to you about geography, climate, the terroir, grapes, you know, which are all important in making Brunello.
Yeah.
Let's start with the grape.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Sangiovese grape.
Sangiovese. Which
some people say it's finicky, it's hard. I mean,
it is
almost like a Pinot Noir, thin skin. It's not thin skin, but tell me why people think that.
It's a very delicate varietal, definitely. It's not like Pinot Noir, definitely, because the skin is not as thin as the Pinot Noir. But technically, it's not an easy varietal. But it's also the varietal most cultivated in Italy. So we have a lot of experience in Italy, and specifically in Tuscany, we can say that the quality Sangiovese are coming from Tuscany. No doubt about it.
Right.
And in Tuscany, Montalcino is probably the peak of the pyramid in terms of quality.
And Montalcino is a very specific area. Let's talk about terroir and climate there. Climate, very warm in the growing season, and what type of soils are the most beneficial?
Yeah, so the climate is quite hot during summer, but there is a lot of ventilation, so it's a windy area. But also here, it depends very much where we are located in Montalcino, because Montalcino is a very nice hill with four different exposures. So that makes the difference also in the wine.
Right. So if you look at a hill, there's the top, middle, bottom, north, south, north, east, south, west. So where are you situated?
We are situated in the southeast part, which is one of the best in terms of soil. And now we are going to the soil, because it's where predominantly we have Galestro. Galestro is this soil which is very suitable for Sangiovese. Especially in the upper part of Montalcino, predominantly is Galestro, and we are there. And that's why that was because the Biondi Santi family, when they came to Montalcino 2 centuries ago,
they were among the first.
Exactly,
they got the pick, right?
They got that because they were definitely the first to choose the location for Sangiovese.
So the vineyards are situated in Montalcino in the best spots.
Absolutely.
Now, Galestro is, it's not just in Montalcino, but it's describe what it is. You know, when people say loamy or sandy or clay, they can imagine. If you're looking at Galestro.
Galestro is a stony soil.
Stony.
Stony, and these stones are made predominantly of sand, compressed.
Okay.
Which gives minerality to the wine, allows the roots of the Sangiovese going very further down. And obviously, the vineyard, the older they are, and the better it is, because with Galestro, they go down, down, down into the soil, and that gets more power and more minerality.
Right.
And so
they struggle and strain. And
exactly.
So two things. The Galestro, which is sandy, at touch, does it break up or it's...
No, it breaks.
It's not firm. It's a compressed sand.
It's a compressed sand, yes.
And then what about rain or irrigation? The rain is very limited and...
No, it's not very limited. It depends, obviously, on every
season.
Year and the season every year. But it's as a regular rainy area. It's not something much rainy. It's it's more rainy than south of Tuscany, where, for example, the Maremmas area.
Right.
We cannot use irrigation, so that's by...
That's part of the regulation.
Of the regulation, yes. So.
And you talked about, you know, it depends on the year. Obviously, some years could be rainy, some can be drier. But it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm a drinker and fan of Brunellos and Sangiovese, it seems like of late, 1 year has been very good, the next year was okay, good, okay. I mean, generally it's been good, but am I seeing that right? You know, as the critics would rate it, a higher vintage, then a little lower, and then back higher and lower. I mean, do you feel and see that, you know, in the vineyards?
Well, you see that. You see that, but obviously it's a natural phenomenon, so you cannot control that. But the important thing is to have vineyard that you can really, by selecting more in bad vintages, you can really keep the quality high.
Right, that's the way you do it.
So we have an average age of the vineyard, which is quite high, and that helps very much in those kind of vintages.
The roots that are down further in the soil.
So that's.
So, what vintage year is currently in the market? And we'll talk about the aging process in a few minutes.
Yeah.
What are we?
Well,
what's available?
Now we have for the Brunello Annata, we have vintage 2012, and we are about to release 13.
For the Annata, which is the regular
Brunello.
And then the Riserva.
The Riserva, we have 2011.
Okay, so the 11 and 12 Beyond Di Santi.
Because Beyond Di Santi is always behind all the other Brunellos.
Right. All right, let's talk a little about Beyond Di Santi, specifically Santi. You know, we framed what's going on in Montalcino and where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a short synopsis of the story of Beyond Di Santi, and I think people are interested anyway, but there's a very key component that Beyond Di Santi is really the originator of Brunello di Montalcino. So just give me a quick walkthrough of that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's an exciting story. As I said, today we have the seventh generation on board, which is Tancredi. And his grand-grandfather was also Tancredi, was one of the major drivers for the quality in Montalcino. And definitely they invented the Brunello in 1888.
Now, what's to invent? I mean, everybody made wine all over the world. No, what was the invention?
The invention was to get the Sangiovese, which was called Sangiovese Grosso at that time, and to make that 100%... So
the 100% part was an important part, quality.
Absolutely, with some rules which then were adopted by the consortium in the 70s, where the consortium was invented, basically.
Right. But the 1970s.
The DOC? The DOC, yes.
Right.
The 1970s.
Just explain quickly what the DOC is. It was a consortium for quality?
It's a consortium for quality, which basically... drive all the rules to be respected by producer to have a certain quality. So it's how much you have to produce per hectares, all this stuff that guarantee that the quality is there.
So the group is a representation.
There was
consistency and quality.
Absolutely.
Right.
And every year you have to give samples to the consortium. One, you have produced the wine, and you have to be accepted by a panel of experts.
All right, so I went off the track. Let's go back to the history. So the Beyond Di Santi, Tancredi innovated Brunello by creating a high-quality 100% Sangiovese wine.
Yes, yes.
And
actually, it was his father, Clemente.
Clemente,
and then Tancredi keep doing that, and Franco was bringing that around the world.
And whether it sounds like much or not, nobody was really doing that, right?
Not at all. If you think that in Italy, the wine bottled in bottle like this one, a 750 bottle, was something very rare in the last century, and they did in the previous century, because they had this clear vision of quality, and they put the wine in this kind of bottle already in the 80s.
Right.
So that was a clear sign of what they wanted to achieve through the production of wine, which was very unusual.
Right.
Very unusual.
So let's talk about, we have a few wines in front of us.
Yeah.
It's a good time to take a quick break.
Yeah,
you mentioned the Annata,
which
is the regular, and I don't like to use the word regular, Beyond Di Santi.
It's the Brunello.
But it's the Brunello. It's the 2012.
Yep.
And it was recently released.
Yeah, this was released few months ago. The 2012 is an amazing vintage in Montalcino.
That was my first question. You were happy with
very
the vintage,
very
the climate,
much.
The production, and all of that?
You know that in Montalcino, the consortium every year define the quality of the vintage by giving stars to that vintage.
That's the way they rate.
That's the way they define the vintage. In 2012
how
was
many
five
stars? One, two. It goes
up
to five?
Five is the top.
And 12 got
and 12
five?
Was five. Yes, like the 10, like it's going to be the 15. So that was a top vintage. And if you put the nose in this glass, you can really perceive the fruit that is coming from that vintage. And in the mouth, these are very fine tannins, very well balanced, but with a lot of power and structure. So this wine can
They're very
really
smooth tannins.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of finesse, but power.
Yeah.
It's got that beautiful Brunello color.
Absolutely.
So this is a good wine. You're happy, 5-star.
We are very happy with this wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about a few things about the wine specifically. Brunello goes through an aging process.
Yes.
Unlike most other wines.
Yeah, it's a very long process.
Let's tell me why it started or became a long process, and tell me a little about the process. Because when you look at Bordeaux or even Burgundy, there's not a lot of similarities in the timelines.
No,
and those are considered, you know, great wines of the world. So why and what is it?
But why we should ask Clemente Biondisanti, which invented the process.
So when he innovated Brunello, he decided that's part of the invention and innovation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That was part of the rules to get this quality with Sangiovese in Montalcino. So this is, as we said, Sangiovese is not an easy varietal, but by having this long-lasting aging process, which is 4 years. I mean, the normal Brunello is released 4 years after the harvest.
Right.
So it's a huge investment, because can you imagine to keep for
inventory.
4 years inventory? It's a huge investment. But this wine well deserved that, because once it gets into the market, it's really refined, ready to drink, and very well aged. And that's the probably the best process to get the best from the Sangiovese into the terroir.
Do you think he felt back in those days that in order to up the quality of the wine, additional aging would make it a world-class wine? I mean, what was his motivation? I mean,
I believe the motivation was exactly that.
Because the wine was not considered wine from the area, right?
No, absolutely not. He had in mind to have this top wine always. That's why he bought, he kept a lot of older vintages also to analyze the evolution of the wine through the years. But definitely the aging process is something which is functional to get this excellence quality.
Right. You talked about the Annata, which is the regular Brunello.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 years after harvest.
Yes.
Then there's reservas in Brunello. You make a reserva. The reserva requires
Additional year, yes.
So in 5 years.
It's 5 years. But in the case of Biondisanti, as I said before, we release 1 year behind the others. So the law, it's 4 years for the regular and 5 for the reserva. But in our case, it's 5 and 6.
Six.
Because the power of our vineyard could be really allow a longer aging and to get even better. Staying there one year more.
Now, I'm intrigued by this, and it's a little nerdy, but I think people who know wine know that a lot of wine, not all wine, is aged in barrels, and Bordeaux ages in French barrels.
Yeah.
Ironically, I think Spanish wine uses a lot of American barrels.
Yeah.
And then there are other kinds. Brunello is pretty much Slovenian oak, right?
Well, it's not Brunello. It's Brunello Biondisanti. Brunello Biondisanti.
Because so Biondisanti.
Biondisanti has always used Slavonian oak, big oak. That was, again, the traditional way of making Brunello, which was invented by the family. But today, most of the producers are using barrique, which is
but
a different...
Biondi's still Slovenian?
Biondisanti never used
that will barrique. Change the profile if you mix or change, right?
It will change. We will never get one barrique for doing that. No.
Can you tell me what you think you know the differences are, or what the Slovenian oak imparts to Biondi compared to other oak?
Well, there are two big differences. One is in the size of the...
Barrels?
The barrel, which obviously the contact with the wood is much bigger. So the impact of the wood into the wine is much bigger.
So most of the wine goes into larger barrels
in our
versus
case,
what people
large.
Visualize as rows of standard size
yes,
barrels.
Yes.
Which for oxygen and the amount of wine has an effect on the
yes,
wine.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's why we don't want to use small oak. Okay. We have only big oak. And the second one is the kind of wood. The Slavonia oak fits very well with our profile, with the acidity of this wine, and they melt better the profile, and refine better the profile of the Sangiovese, without being too much stronger on the wine. You know,
right.
There is no much strong impact on the
wine. Now, are some of the larger barrels, are they older?
We have barreled a big oak from the 1880.
Really?
But we now stop using that for producing wine because there is also a renovation that you have to apply.
Right.
But we are still using oak from the 40s, for example.
Do you ever experiment with other oak?
We did, yes.
Didn't like the results?
We are under experimentation now, so I can't tell you much
right.
about that. But we are experimenting four different kind of wood now. And we'll see what happens. But the key target for us is to keep coherence in the
right.
wine profile that we have. So that's for us is a must.
And one thing we didn't talk about is you make a third wine,
yep.
which is a Rosso di Montalcino. And I wouldn't say Rosso is cheaper, less expensive, or not as good. It's just a different wine. Tell me what the Rosso is, what Rosso is,
yeah.
and tell me about the Beyond di Santi.
Yeah, so Rosso basically is what we call the entry level in the model of Montalcino. It's still produced with 100% Sangiovese grapes. In our case, are the younger vine that are used for Rosso. And it doesn't go through the 4-year aging. It's just released after 2 years.
So it ages two years, though.
It is 2 years in our case, one
right.
year for the others.
Right.
So by law, it's just 1 year after the harvest. So that's an easier wine, but still very elegant because it's fresher.
Right.
It's
right. I have a feeling that the Beyond di Santi Rossos may compete with other Brunellos just because of the property, the soil, the winemaking, you know,
yeah.
everything that goes
yeah.
along with that.
That's what some sommelier told me, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I think you've earned, you know,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
right. Gianpiero, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I have a few more questions for you. We have time to taste some wine for our weekly wine sip. I think I want to subject you to our wine list and have you answer a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Gianpiero Bertolini. He is the new CEO of legendary Brunello di Montalcino house, Beyond di Santi. You're listening to The Grape Nation. We'll be back in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Sleep just to wake up.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, Giampiero Bertolini. Giampiero is the CEO of Biondi Santi, the Brunello di Montalcino producer in Il Greppo, Italy. I wanted to ask you, there were a lot of changes in Italy, in Tuscany, around Montalcino in the 70s and 80s. And I think there were at least two major things that happened. I think the introduction of Super Tuscans,
yep.
And I also think the proliferation of more winemakers. Let's start with the Super Tuscan thing. I think people define Super Tuscan as a Sangiovese-based wine with the addition of other grapes like Cabernet, changes the profile. It makes it, what does it do? It makes it a bigger, broader-shouldered wine?
Well, that was a great invention, I would say.
Right.
The Super Tuscan was a great invention because basically what we call vino da tavola, which was not part of any...
Like a table wine or something?
Yeah, table wine, something like that. The concept was to bring the vino da tavola to a very high level of quality. The first thing to introduce that concept was Sassicaia, as you may know.
Right.
And today the Super Tuscan is not something which is defined by law, but it's a concept that means high-end wines which are not part of the appellation.
There's no DOC, DOCG
no,
for Super Tuscan.
Absolutely no.
Like a table wine, you could
do it's
whatever.
It's called IGT,
right.
Indicazione Geografica Tipica, but they don't undergo any kind of rule. So it could be Sangiovese with Cabernet, could be Bordeaux blend, like in Bulgaris, for example. And that was a great category because definitely elevated the profile of the quality wine from Tuscany.
Attention,
etc.
But did it have an effect? You know, here you are, this old school legendary maker. People are like, okay, they're good, but, you know, this is the hot thing. I mean, or things were fine.
No, I would say that overall was a positive phenomenon for Tuscany.
To this day, you feel that way?
Yeah. Absolutely. It was positive. Yeah.
Most of the people making the Super Tuscans are very serious, well-heeled.
Yes. There was an overcrowded situation, I would say, lately on Super Tuscan because everybody tried to make his own Super Tuscan, but in reality, the real Super Tuscan, a few wines.
Well, that was the second part of the question.
Yeah.
There was, in the 70s and 80s, a growth of winemakers.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of that points towards Super Tuscans, and I think a lot of other Brunello makers came in.
Yeah.
That was the 70s and 80s?
That was in the 70s and 80s.
Why did that happen? It was just the right time because the product was getting attention?
I believe there was...
Why was there that spike?
There was a need to get out from the denomination because, economically speaking, the denomination limits yourself. Because, I mean, there is a sort of pricing for Brunello, pricing for Chianti, and the Super Tuscan don't have any kind of limitation because it's just Super Tuscan, which doesn't mean anything.
So easy to jump into.
Easy to jump into. Not very easy to impose into the market because up to now there are few really Super Tuscan that really benefit from this positioning.
Right.
So after the
does it really boil down to that? I mean, you
no,
would know as
I
well.
Believe, it,
there's really a handful of well-made.
Yeah.
There are others, but beyond that, you know, either the quality or they're not really representing the category.
No, there are many good products on so-called Super Tuscan,
right.
But there are very few which are really recognized as such.
Right.
That's the point. That's the point. And there are those who were invented at the beginning, basically, in the 70s, as you mentioned.
Which I wanted to get into because I think two things. One, your background is important to where Brunello's and this brand can go and how people, you know, have perceived Brunello's, you know, around the world. Let's start with Brunello as a category. Does it get the attention recognition, sales around the world that it deserves? Or is there still a growth stage for that?
No, definitely there is a growth stage for Brunello.
Right.
But
more than some other wines. I mean, you could say that about everything.
No, much more. If you go to, if you come to Italy and you ask to a normal consumer, tell me one wine, they will tell you, a quality wine, they will tell you one Sassicaia on one side and Brunello on the other.
Right.
That's what they know. That means that in the mind of the consumer, not only in Italy, all over the world, Brunello, it's a quality proposition. So there is a lot of work to do, but there is a lot of space to grow. And Brunello now is very hot. If you believe that the cost for an hectare in the Brunello area now is the highest in Italy, it's close to 1 million per hectare.
Wow.
1 million.
It's like Napa.
It's
the prices have gone crazy.
Gone crazy. That's because the high demand that Brunello has having it everywhere in the world now. So there is a huge space for growth, especially for those Brunello like Biondi Santi.
Well, that was my next question. Biondi Santi can use some exposure or marketing. You're in a good place at a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
The brand has all the vitals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, history, well-made, consistency. Yeah. I guess one of your objectives is to get it out there.
It is absolutely, because we don't look at Brunello or Italy. We look at international positioning with Biondi Santi, and we want to increase our value as much as we can.
By keep
increasing quality first, because the quality is, it's...
That was never a problem.
No, that was not a problem. But, and then start investing much more into the... telling the story, telling what we are. It's simply to say, it's not easy to implement, but we own the history of Brunello. So we have to deliver this message all over the world.
How do you do that? I mean, is that paid advertising? Is it social media?
No.
Is it connecting with sommeliers, distributors? I mean, what are the roots of getting that done?
On two levels. One side, by involving all our trade around the world and talking to them, informing them, by one-to-one meeting. On the other side, communicating to consumers through PR, through social, but obviously in a way which is due to this kind of product, obviously.
Right. You want to keep it consistent to the image and all.
This was not done in the last 20 years. So we have to catch up with a normal situation where we have to communicate.
The great news is the upside is
Very
high.
No. But that's, I'm saying that in a positive way. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We talked about this a little off air before we taste a little wine, and I ask you to answer my wine list.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of the most prominent sommeliers on my show, and... you know, a lot of them are Italian restaurants, whether it's Babbo or Morea, Marini, all these places. And I say Sangiovese or Barolo.
Yeah.
And this is just me. It's not scientific. It just seems like the tilt is towards Barolo, which leads me to believe that Sangiovese doesn't get the respect it deserves. And then I did a little research, and a dear friend of mine who just wrote a book, Rajat Parr, talks about no negative about Sangiovese, but it just doesn't get the respect. Okay. Do you feel or sense that? I mean, is that a challenge of yours?
It is a challenge, and I believe there's also a question of numbers here, because Nebbiolo is very tiny in terms of hectare produced, while Sangiovese is very vast in Italy. But there is Sangiovese and Sangiovese. You cannot compare the Sangiovese in Emilia-Romagna with the Sangiovese in Montalcino.
Of course.
So we need to educate the Soms on Sangiovese. That's why also Biondi Santi is doing some master classes around the world on Sangiovese, explaining what is the real Sangiovese coming from Tuscany and specifically from Montalcino, which is something which has extraordinary quality. I mean, that's recognized from everybody for the Brunello. So yes, it's a big challenge, but I believe it's something that we can achieve through the Brunello
going forward, addressing that issue.
Absolutely.
One last thing. there is a wine, and people can get confused. Vino di nobili di Montepulciano, and people hear Montepulciano, Montalcino.
Yeah,
they don't know what they heard.
Yeah.
Just tell me quickly, difference.
Well, difference are two different kind of varietals, despite similar, because the original clone is still the Sangiovese.
Right.
But I would say the most differentiating factor is the location. I mean, Montalcino has this fantastic position.
It's about terroir and location.
Yeah, which makes, at the end, the difference in the into the
right.
the final products.
I say no more. I mean, I think, that's enough.
That comes from the soil, so that's...
All right.
Yeah.
Giampiero, every week we ask our guests to answer our wine list because... when we have an opportunity to sit in front of the best people in the business, we want to know what they're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So this is five questions. We ask the same five questions to everybody. Don't dwell or obsess on them.
Mm-hmm.
Just answer them as best as you can.
Yeah.
And the first question is, what are you drinking now? What's on your table at home? What's at work? What are you trying? Is it seasonal?
Yeah.
You know, beyond the Beyond Di Santi thing. Are you curious about anything?
Yeah. So in this specific moment, which is, I mean, winter.
Right.
So
seasonal.
Seasonal.
Red.
I'm on red, definitely. Obviously, Sangiovese, it's mostly on my table, but I'm a great fan of Pinot Noir.
Okay.
So if I had to pick a bottle and to celebrate something, I would definitely get a Pinot Noir, which could be either from France.
So French Burgundy.
French Burgundy.
And also. Or yeah. What else?
Yeah. And I like very much the German Pinot Noir.
Okay.
German, very nice.
It's a much lighter, restrained.
Yes. But I like that very much.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Do you have a favorite wine and food pairing? Is there something, not that you eat it every night or even once a month, but is there a pairing that you've had with wine that just resonated with you?
I do. As a Tuscan person, I really like to pair steak with a great Brunello. Because the steak is
a nice, big, bloody Tuscan steak.
Exactly.
That may be the
Florentine steak, you know.
Besides champagne and oysters, a Tuscan steak and Brunello may be the greatest pairing.
I'm allergic to seafood, so I cannot.
So, but you can't disagree that those are two of the greatest pairings. Okay?
Absolutely.
I agree with you.
Fully agree, yeah.
All right. I don't know how you're going to answer this, but let's figure out. I asked my guests their favorite wine restaurant and or bar. So I think what we should do is probably enough of our listeners travel. They're in Tuscany. If you want to tell me a place that just does wine really well in the area or New York or around the world, can you think of one or two places, you know, without leaving a friend out or being exclusive? Are there any places that are just really good?
Well, in Tuscany, one of my favorite, and it's probably one of the best restaurants in Italy, it's Enoteca Pinchiori.
What hotel is that in?
No, there is not in an hotel. It's by itself.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an amazing place.
That spell?
Enoteca Pinchiori.
Pinchiori. Enoteca Pinchiori.
Pinchiori.
Just a very fine restaurant with an incredible wine list.
Yeah, it's an incredible wine list. It's probably the biggest seller, one of the biggest sellers in the world for wine. I mean, they own probably 80,000 bottles.
Jeez, amazing. That's amazing.
But the food is astonishing. The food is astonishing. So that's probably my favorite.
Is there a wine bar where if you just want wine?
No, it's a fine dine restaurant. So you.
But do you have a wine bar, another destination that you like that you can go to, or it's mostly restaurants?
No, restaurant, mostly restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Does Giampiero Bertolini have an all-time favorite wine? Now, it could be one, it could be two. What I realized in asking this question is it doesn't have to be the rarest, the most expensive.
No.
A lot of time it's boiled down to the experience, who and where you had it with.
Sure.
Is there a wine that you could separate?
There is a wine which to me is something astonishing. I'm a very passionate of Riesling.
Okay.
So there is a Riesling called Nohoff, N-O-H-O-F-F.
N-O-H-O-F-F.
Yeah, which is something astonishing.
Like Donhoff without the D-O.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. This is something really astonishing. So that's one of the wine that I always keep in my mind.
Now, really, current and older vintages?
Sorry?
Current vintages
vintages. Older vintages. Older, but not it so holds old. Up. I tested 2 weeks ago, for example, I was in Germany. I tested the winter 2013.
Not that old, but not old, some good bottle age.
But they can age for 25 years. So that's. But that profile of wine made me really crazy.
Okay, that's a good one. It's great to hear an Italian red wine Brunello maker single out a Riesling. Riesling is a favorite to a lot of people. Yeah. All right, I think you can answer this, and we could approach it different ways. I ask everyone to recommend the best wine around $15-$20 retail, and it could be a category, it could be a maker, it could be a region. Like, for instance, Muscadet is a delicious wine for white that's very reasonable in that price range.
Yeah.
Do you think Rosso, or I mean, what are some great value wines? It doesn't have to be Brunello or whatever.
No, I understand. Between
$15 and $20. Retail.
Retail,
not wholesale.
Price.
Yeah.
So I could definitely recommend one wine from Tuscany.
Go ahead. That's what I'm looking for.
Which is called Allier.
Spell?
A-L-I-E.
Allier.
Is a rosé wine produced by Frescobaldi.
Okay.
In the estate of Ammiraglia in Maremma, Toscana. And this is something really astonishing.
What kind of grapes is he using?
They have Syrah and Vermentino.
Nice.
So they are very, it's a very fresh, but with this kind of structure, it's something astonishing.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Now give me a white. Think of a white.
A white, white from Tuscany.
From anywhere. Not, you know, any Tuscany. Wine that you pick up, that's a great value. Is it Vermentino? Is it Verdicchio?
No,
is it
I like very much Sauvignon from, for example, Sauvignon from Friuli.
Okay.
Sauvignon from Friuli, there are many.
Sauvignon Blanc?
Sauvignon Blanc from Friuli. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. That's
and those tend to fall in that price range, and they're well-made and a good value.
Absolutely.
Can you think of a maker? Does anything come to mind?
Well, there is one, it's called Athems, which is...
Spell.
A-T-T-E-M-S.
Okay.
Count Athems was the founder of the consortium of Collio.
C-O-L-L-I-O.
The denomination in Collio. That Sauvignon is amazing.
Okay. I tell everyone that we post on our social media your wine list and all this stuff because people are very curious and you know, they go out and try them.
Uh-huh.
Great job on that. And like I said, we'll post... Giampiero's answers on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All right, before we wrap up, I am graced by the fact that Giampiero brought in three different Beyond des Santés. We're going to spend the most time on the Reserva. But we'll talk about the other ones too. So the Reserva is a 2011 Beyond des Santés.
Yep.
Tell me a little more about the wine.
So, first of all, the Reserva, as we said, is released 6 years after the harvest. And this vintage was good vintage, not excellent. So we had...
12 better than 11, this being the 11.
That's the 11.
Okay.
That's the 11. We had to postpone a little bit the harvest to manage the season. Later, yeah.
Okay.
But at the end, we came out with this wine here, which has a great structure, very fine tannins, and very long finish. The Reserva is something that has a...
So let's evaluate it. Color?
Color is quite intense, as you can see.
Yeah.
Is
classic color?
Classic color, quite still ruby red.
Ruby red. The edges are fine.
Exactly. It's perfectly fine.
And, let's go nose.
Yeah.
You give me the descriptors.
If you feel the nose. The nose is still of young wine. You don't feel tobacco yet. You feel more the fruit.
Right.
It's a fruit which will be evolved in the year to come, but it will take probably 20, 25, 30 years, this wine here. So it's a very live wine.
Right.
If you put it in your mouth, you
give me the mouth feel. Mm-hmm.
The entrance is quite
full.
The tannins are very well refined.
Very smooth.
Smooth.
Integrated.
Integrated. And the acidity is still very present, which makes the difference from this Brunello from most of the others. Because
which I think goes well with food.
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Good acidity, right?
It depends which food, but yeah, definitely.
Right, of course. And I'm going to ask you that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Does the palate reflect the nose? What else do you get on the palate?
I believe so. It's very well balanced, and there is coherence here. You know, in the nose you perceive what I say is still the fruit, which we have
right
then in your mouth. So it's quite coherent. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the 2011 Reserva.
Yeah.
Because every wine, every vintage is different. What would you pair this wine with now, if somebody bought it and opened it this year, next year?
This goes very well with meat, with quite a lot of grass. How do you say the fat?
Fatty meats.
Fatty meats.
Yeah.
Because these tannins could clean.
Hold up to
hold
the
up
fat.
And cleans very well your mouth. That's a very good pairing. And with a very nice risotto, for example, and Parmesan cheese.
It can hold up to the creaminess and richness.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a terrific wine. What I think would be fun is to try the Rosso.
Absolutely.
Because we've been drinking the 2012.
Yeah.
Now, I'm guessing this is a terrific wine, the 11 Reserva. You're going to be thrilled about the 2012 Reserva based on what you told me
Absolutely.
All right. So the Rosso di Montalcino. Let's tell everyone again what the Rosso is.
So the Rosso is produced from a younger vineyard at the estate of Biondi Santi, and is not aged like the Brunello. It's aged only 2 years in our case.
Are all Rossos aged 2 years or a year? So you're doing everything an additional year.
An additional year. By law, it's just 1 year. Grape is always 100% Sangiovese.
All right, so finish.
This is very important because it's the first taste of the fantastic 2015 vintage in Tuscany. So this is the real first bottle.
So here's your window into
the 15.
Yeah,
the window into the
15. If the Rosso is good, the Brunellos are going to
be fantastic.
Okay.
All
right, so let's quickly go through this because it's nice to go both ends.
Absolutely.
This is a little deeper, darker color.
It is.
The edges are darker. The color is
darker. But it's lighter as well. The red is even more evident.
So that's your color.
Yeah, color.
Tell me the nose. Obviously, it's going to be younger, but what do you pick up?
It's younger. It's younger. The fruit is very strong here.
Yes.
The fruit is extremely strong. And if you put this in the mouth, you feel a very well-balanced fine, very fine, because this vintage is really very elegant. And
it's elegant yet more unctuous than the Reserva. It's a little more...
Mm-hmm.
The tannins are terrific, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not grainy or rough.
Berry. You feel this berry in the mouth. And
so the palate, you get berry?
You get berry in the
dark
palate.
Dark berries? Red
dark,
berries?
Dark berries.
Okay.
Yeah. But you feel this finesse and this long finish, and these tannins are really very well balanced. And it's a long finish for being
what
a
foods
Rosso.
Would you recommend go with this?
Well, it's not very much different from the other.
Right.
Because it's still Sangiovese.
It can hold up to red meats, fatty,
exactly.
A rich, creamy risotto with anything. You
Even
know.
A very nice steak. Nice steak.
This would hold up to steak, too.
Yeah.
All right, so we tasted the 2011 Reserva Biondi Santi, which is the Reserva that's on the market. We've been drinking the 2012 Annata, which was just released, and that's the regular Brunello di Montalcino. And Giampiero says 12 was a great year, just as 11. And the 2015 Rosso di Montalcino, which, again, is another great vintage year. And it's nice to go with a great producer with one of their more value-oriented wines, yeah. Which is the Rosso, which is available in the market now?
It is available, absolutely, in the market.
Okay.
Yes.
All this stuff is available, you know, at better wine stores, you know, where you shop.
Yep.
All right, Gian Piero, we're going to wrap up the show. I thank you. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation. Follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby and the hashtag The Grape Nation.
Mm-hmm.
On Twitter, we're at BenRuby. Also subscribe to The Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. As I said earlier, we'll post Gian Piero's wine list answers, and we'll post all the wines that we tasted today on the weekly wine sip and during the show. Gian Piero, if we want to find out more about Beyond di Santi on social media,
yep,
or websites,
absolutely,
where do we go?
We go on the website. Website is beyonddisanti.com.
Okay.
And
it's a very rich site. Talks about history, the product.
It's not very rich yet, but we
it's
are
good
enriching.
Enough.
It's,
we it, are it's good enough. It's well, good that's enough. Your job.
Yeah, it's our job. Exactly.
You just started,
exactly,
you know, last year. Yeah,
we'll not give, ready with everything.
We'll give you a chance.
Exactly.
I'll check back with you.
We'll do our
but
best.
It will change, but it's not a bad start.
No, no.
And then what about, are you doing any social media, or are you going to ramp that up?
We are doing something here in the U.S., definitely, through our partner Wilson Daniels.
Okay.
So they will run something here,
right,
and not yet back in Italy.
Okay. I want to thank our guest, Gian Piero Bertolini. Gian Piero is the new CEO of Beyond di Santi. He has a lot of exciting things in store for an already storied winery. I want to thank our engineers and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.